Welcome back to The Inspired Educator, empowering new teachers to thrive. I'm your host, Dr. Latoya Crockett, and I'm so excited to have you join me today. This podcast is all about supporting new and aspiring teachers as they navigate the joys and challenges of teaching. Whether you're a first-year teacher, a substitute teacher, or transitioning into education, we are here to uplift and inspire you as you navigate your teaching journey. Today, we're talking about a challenge that many new teachers face. How do we effectively communicate with parents? Joining me today is Dr. Janae Alfred, an educator, instructional coach, and director of community and culture. Dr. Alfred brings years of experience in building school-family partnerships and developing teachers into strong communicators. Dr. Alfred, welcome to The Inspired Educator.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here today.
Before we jump into our topic, I would love for you to tell our listeners about you, about your journey, what has inspired you to become an educator, and why are you so passionate about effectively communicating with our families?
Yeah, thank you. So I am in year 17 currently, school year number 17. So I'm a 17-year educator. Started off as a classroom teacher. As you mentioned, have been an instructional coach. I've been an assistant principal, a building level principal, and a district level leader in both public and private sectors. And so through my experiences, I have found that communication is the key. Like, the only way to be successful as an educator is to communicate clearly and frequently with parents. And so the more frequently and clearly you communicate with parents, the easier your job becomes. And a lot of the anxieties and difficulties that and stigmas, quite frankly, that surround issues in education can all be cleared with like frequent and clear communication. Once I figured that out earlier on in my career, it helped me like propel and grasp a better understanding of like how to navigate the field of education. And so, and also like I'm the first educator in my family. And so being the first educator in my family and like having a good relationship with my personal parents, like my parents, I was able to like learn and hear like and compare from the inside out, like their journey as parents with my journey as an educator and just kind of like asking, what did you wish you knew? What did you wish you had known? That kind of thing. So being able to like have firsthand experiences and conversations with my parents kind of helped guide that process. And it really highlighted how important parent engagement and parent communication is for educators.
You know, you just said a lot. Like, oh my gosh, like we could almost stop right here. So a couple of things that you said, they resonated with me. One, I love that you have the experience with both the public and the private sector. I think communication is key, as you have already stated, but I do have to admit that I think sometimes the way you communicate with parents might be a little bit different in the public versus the private sector. So hopefully we'll be able to touch on that a little bit later on in the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely.
The second thing that you said that really resonated with me was that you had your parents to look to as examples of amazing communicators, right? Mm-hmm. So we know that a lot of the things that our children say, they're saying it because they've heard it at some point in time, most likely, most often within their home. So many of the ways that we communicate as adults are also coming from the way we have been communicated with within our home, the way we grew up. So that's really something that we need to look at. That's something that I have had to look at as my journey as an educator. The way that I communicate, it comes from the way my mother communicated with me.
That's
good,
right.
Or bad. It is what it is. But yes, I absolutely love that you brought that up already.
Thank you.
So let's start with the basics. In your experience, what are the first steps that new teachers can take to help begin those positive relationships with parents at the beginning of the school year? How do we set them up for success?
I think it's really important to establish your relationship with parents authentically and like set up parameters and make it crystal clear for parents to know not only how they can get in touch with you, but like how you plan to get in touch with them. I know a lot of schools and districts kind of like send this message of like, particularly to teachers, like, you know, it's important for you to reach out to the parents in the first weeks of school and, you know, do a phone call and make sure it's it's positive. And while it can sound kind of hokey or corny to some people, like, it really is important to establish positive connections first. One of my schools that I've worked in, they do something called, it's like a parent teacher conference. It is prior to any grades are established. And so they have a getting to know you conference where you meet with the parents in the beginning of the school year and you ask them a couple of questions like, how do we get in touch with you? Do you prefer email, phone call, or text message? You know, how frequently, what are your expectations for me as your child's teacher? And here are some of my expectations of how I want, you know, you to communicate with me as a parent. And what are some things I should know about your child? Like, and that is incredibly beneficial. But also, I think it's important because being a new teacher can be overwhelming as well, right? And so knowing that you can kind of chunk that task and tackle it one piece at a time. So like, in my first years, like, I did not know this year one. I definitely didn't learn this year one. But after the first year, you kind of sit back and reflect on what you can do better and what you can change. So like about my second or third year in the classroom, I kind of split my like class list up into chunks of like five or whatever. I would call five parents a day at the end of the day and just say, hey, I'm Miss Al. I'm your kid's teacher, blah, blah, blah. And you have those like casual conversations. Just want to let you know I'm here. You know, want to double check and see if you have my number, want to double check and see if you have my email address, ask some of those questions. And then that kind of opens the door. And I think the most important about that communication is authenticity. Parents and kids know when you are phoning it in or faking it. You want to make sure that you are genuinely communicating and coming from a good place when you are communicating and engaging with parents. Sometimes it's easy because like, you have built-in events, open houses, and things like that. And even in those, like, capitalize on those moments. Shake those hands, you know, get to know people, have a casual conversation, but be yourself while you're doing it. Like, you want to remain professional, right? Because you're at work. But you want to still be authentic and, you know, share a bit of yourself with the people you're working with. Because, quite frankly, teaching and education is a people business. And so if you're not a people person, like it's not a good place for you. And so you have to be able to just have that balance where you're like engaging with people. People want to know that you care about their kid. They can trust you with their child and that, you know, in an instance where you are the professional in the room, that you can show up and be the professional in the room. So I think those are some ways to start, like chunking that work, making sure you're doing it, like making those intentional connections, and then you are being authentic when you make them.
So thinking about that authenticity piece, mm-hmm. when you are communicating or engaging with families, mm-hmm. how does culture play a role in that communication? Does it play a role in that communication when we talk about inclusivity, right? And all the definitions of inclusivity, right? How does that play into the way we communicate with our families?
So I think it's really important to, first and foremost, before I even answer that, like, yes, culture absolutely plays a huge role and a big part in communicating with parents. One thing I remember I have to keep at the forefront of my mind as an educator in all the positions I've held over the years, like one thing I keep at the forefront of my mind is I cannot teach parents how to parent their children. Like, that's not my role. So parents are the expert of parenting their kids in their space. As an educator, I am the expert of educating the kids in my space. And so when you talk about culture, I use that as my grounding point and my framework to remember. So like, while I cannot dictate what happens in your home, in my school, in my classroom, in my space, here are my clear expectations in this space, and I can use your help and support in enforcing those in this space. If you allow these things in your home, cool. No judgment. Do your thing. But it's important to kind of delineate that line in between, but also respect it, right? So like, as people have their own traditions and customs and just like culture in the very like generic, zoomed out form of the word, like in our house, you know, we take our shoes off before we walk through that. Like, some people do, some people don't. Like, and in that house, like, we respect that and don't diminish that. It's important to respect the cultures that happen in both places. Again, another reason why that initial touch point is important in the beginning of the year. Sometimes I have had to write down a little student profile. Here's student John Smith or John Doe and their parents, blah, blah, blah. And this is what they do. Because keep it honest, all the kids we see in the course of a year, depending on what you're doing, you can't commit it all to memory. You might need a cheat sheet. So you create the cheat sheet. It's worth it because those authentic relationships are going to like help you along the way in the long run. And quite frankly, I don't think anybody is expecting any one person to remember every aspect and facet of their life as you're engaging with them. But it is worth the work and the effort because, again, it supports that notion that trust is there and they can trust you with their child and you know what you're talking about. If you are the authority in the classroom, if you are the expert in education who is teaching their child, like they need to know and believe that that's who and what you are. And a lot of people don't typically look at education as like a service industry job, but it very much is. We love a service that we provide to parents and that's what we have to do. If you're in a public space, it's paid through tax dollars. If you're in a private space, it's paid through tuition. And at the end of the day, they're still the consumers and we're the, you know, we're selling a product to a certain extent. Yeah, you do have to keep culture in the forefront and it will impact like how you communicate. And because it does impact how you communicate as the educational professional in the room, it is our responsibility to do our due diligence to learn about it and respect it and share with our parent consumers like what our expectations are and share that so we can hold each other accountable at the same level.
I could not agree more. You know, I came into teaching later in life. I did not graduate and immediately go into the classroom. I worked a few customer service positions and one of them was in banking. I work in the insurance industry. So I have worked with people's money and I have worked with their cars, right? Mm-hmm. And now I work with their children. All three very important things to people. Mm-hmm. One of those skills that I brought over with me is that customer service aspect.
Absolutely.
I really think that is why I have been very fortunate and I've had great relationships with my parents. Yes. One of the things I learned early on is that we want the same things. Our parents, our communities, our educators, we all want the same thing. We want what's best for children.
Absolutely.
The disagreement, the barriers come when we go about it in different ways.
That's right.
And so you saying, you really nailing down that what you do in your home, in your space is your right and your business. Mm-hmm. I don't have any control there. Right. However, when you come into our school, mm-hmm. we have created a safe space. We have rules and boundaries that we have to abide by. Things might work a little bit different. I respect your space. I'm asking you to respect ours and we do it together.
Exactly. And if I may, like as the educator in the room, as like, and that is how I like to reflect on that role. Like teachers are the rulers of that domain. Like we're the experts in the room at that time. And so one thing good leaders, good educators, and all educators are leaders. One thing good leaders do is we have to know, it's going to sound kind of corny, but like you got to know when to hold them and you got to know when to fold them, right? Some hills are not worth dying on. So think about like one of my first classroom experiences. I was raised in a very somewhat strict, but like a traditional household environment, right? And so I was raised to say yes, ma'am, and no, ma'am in my house to my parents. And we didn't say yeah. Like if my parents called me from across the room, like Janae, I couldn't say yeah. I had to say yes, ma'am, or yes, sir. And so when I got to the classroom, like my bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, straight out of college into the classroom. And I'm setting down, you know, setting my expectations and rules and norms for my classroom, you know, very, very much like prescribed from the last textbook I read. I was calling a kid's name. I'm like, hey, you know, so-and-so. And they go, yeah. And I was like, don't say yeah to me. And then I was like, wait a minute, I had to step back and reflect, like, wait a minute, did we talk about this? I know this is something we do in my house, you know, and then is this something I want to like lose it over? I don't want to send a bunch of referrals to the office saying the child didn't say yes, ma'am, or no, ma'am. Like, is that something we do at school? Like, is this a me thing or is this a us thing, a them thing? Like, and then I got to the point where I was like, it's not that big of a deal. Like, what am I trying to do? If I'm trying to get a child's attention, then that's what I'm trying to do. Do they have to say ma'am? Do they have to say yes or yeah? Like, that's something we as educators in that space have to decide and then make sure it makes sense and then explicitly share the expectation with the kids and the parents so they can support you. So if I decided that was not worth losing my head over, it did become a little bit of a pet peeve for me to hear yeah as opposed to yes. That's just the old school in me. After reflecting on that, I had to have a conversation with my class as a whole, not the one kid, because that kid didn't do anything wrong, but having an expectation and rationale with my kids. So it became, this is Miss Alford's class and in this room, in an attempt to strengthen our vocabulary, strengthen our grammar, strengthen the way we speak to one another. When we call each other's attention, please say yes or no, not yeah or uh-uh. And the reason why is to strengthen our communication skills. And then you share that with the parents and however you communicate. For me, I had to do a weekly newsletter. So a weekly newsletter included, here's what we did for the week. We discussed expectations around answering questions. One thing we discussed was when getting each other's attention, reply with yes or no, as opposed to yeah and uh-uh. And, just putting it all in writing and sharing it with the parents so then they can help support those expectations in your space too. So I think that's an important piece about communicating as well between not just students, but with parents as well. Helping them understand what you expect, but making really good decisions and not engaging in power struggles and in battles that don't make sense, because that also helps maintain and respect the boundaries and the different cultures that happen in people's homes as well.
Yes. You know, your last few comments directly lead into my next question.
Sure.
So I was going to ask, what role does communication play when you have to deliver not so happy news?
Yeah. Right?
You think we are going to have behaviors. Behaviors will look different, but you are going to have behaviors. You are going to have to call a parent at some point in your career and let them know that your child did not follow classroom expectations.
Mm-hmm.
When you have those conversations, you know, I'm going to be honest, I really feel like you have answered this, but I am going to ask because I love to make everything crystal clear.
Good communication, right?
Exactly. When you are making those phone calls to parents, and I am going to be clear and say phone calls, because anytime you have an issue, that should be the first way you communicate with family.
Yes.
That's the first time they're hearing it needs to be through a phone call.
Yes.
So when you pick up that phone, you are first to your teacher, you are nervous, you could be scared, and yes, you have to call a parent and you have to tell them something that you know is not great news. What types of strategies, tools, or just advice would you give to a new teacher having to make that first nerve-wracking, terrifying phone call?
Mm-hmm. So first and foremost, like I know I mentioned, like that first week of school connection and positive communication, like that's why that's so important, because you don't ever want the first phone call to be, hi, I'm your child's teacher and I'm calling to tell you all the terrible things your child has done. Like that is why it is so important to make that first positive phone call and that getting to know you type of thing. But with that, I also think it's important, like to your point, to make that contact and communication a phone call. So much can be misconstrued and misunderstood in an email and or a text message, like tone and all of that. You just don't know. And the weaker your relationship is with the parent, the more likely the message will be misconstrued. And so it absolutely has to be a phone call. It has to be timely, which is why you can't spend a whole lot of time fretting over what's about to happen. And it has to be informative. And you want to make sure you leave as much bias out as possible. When you are delivering news, particularly about a physical encounter with students, like a fight, you cannot share the other child's information, because parents always want to know, well, what happened with the other kid? What happened with the other kid? You cannot share that information. And so I like to equip myself with a few key phrases. So first, when I call the parent, I say, you know, hey, this is Dr. Alfred. Before we begin this conversation, I want to let you know, and typically this is the case, sometimes it's not, but typically this is the case unless you're the nurse. I like to say, this is Dr. Alfred. I'm calling to let you know that first and foremost, your child is safe. Your child is not hurt. Your child does not need to be picked up. Your child is okay. Because when people see that school's phone number flash up, they're like, oh my God, it's an emergency. My child's in the hospital. So I like to provide that. Then I like to say, you know, I'm calling for, and then insert the reason here. Like, you know, today Janae was at school at recess and she got into a little bit of a disagreement with a classmate. And I like to use the word disagreement when it is a verbal altercation, because when you say the word fight, it invokes certain feelings and emotions. And so when there is a verbal like fight, I like to say disagreement. When it is a physical altercation, I like to say physical altercation, because again, fight is very emotional and it can be misconstrued and unclear. And when it is just like an exchange of hits, because sometimes it's not, sometimes kids are putting their hands on each other, like kind of playing around or like swatting at each other. I also like to distinguish when it's that too, like they were putting their hands on each other, they were swatting back and forth, they exchanged licks, that kind of thing. And again, that goes back to that clear communication, because when you hear fight, like boxers get paid to fight. And when you hear the word fight, are we talking like Mike Tyson? Are we in the ring? Is this MMA at this point? What are we doing? Or are we talking about a couple of like swats? Did we slap? Is it open palm? That is important. And the word I'm looking for is context. The more context you can provide the parent with is going to be really important. So you have to have a full story. You also have to be timely. So what I like the conversation to sound like is, you know, Janae had a verbal altercation with a classmate. It happened at recess. The students are not in the same classroom, so they are both in the classroom at this time. I am still investigating it. I just wanted to make you aware right now. Once I finish my investigation, I will give you a call back and let you know what the outcome is after a decision has been made. You always want to make sure you communicate with the parent prior to the child getting home. A lot of times kids take things out of context, and when they share that information with their parent, it is misconstrued, it is emotional, and it is from one point of view. Even if you don't have all the answers in the moment, it is important to let the parent know that something happened. Here's what the something is, and I'm investigating and looking into it as a teacher. Even as a teacher, I sent them to the principal's office. They're going to, you know, look into it further. Either the principal or I will communicate with you once I get a response as to what the consequence is. And then, you know, if it helps, and I've had to do this too, write a script out, and that can be beneficial. I used to have cheat sheets, like a little binder or folder of cheat sheets that I would write out next to my phone. That was very helpful when I was in the classroom, and I would just pull it out. And now it's so ingrained, I just kind of know it's memorized, and it's my little script now that I use when I have to call parents for anything. The other thing is like frequent communication. So I particularly think about injuries and things like that. Like I remember my first year as an assistant principal, and this was a mistake. Like I messed up royally, and this was a learning moment for me. But a kid fell down on the playground playing, fell down, scraped their knee. Anything came from it. Like no blood, no like, hey, okay, you need to go to the nurse. No, I'm okay. Kept playing. It was what it was. I didn't call home. We kept it moving. The next day I got to work, missed phone calls, voicemail, emails out the wazoo. Like, oh my God, my child fell down. My child hurt themselves. Nobody called me. Nobody let me know. Nobody said anything. Like, da da da. I got reamed. And to me, I was just like, well, it wasn't a big deal. They weren't bleeding. But what it reminded me, similar to the notion of like, we don't get to tell parents how to parent. Like, we also don't get to decide what is a big deal and what is a little deal. And so that new script I had to create was just kind of like a, hey, you know, today outside at recess, Janae slipped and fell. There are no injuries. I send every child to the nurse if they're injured. I don't even care. If they say no, I say, you need to get checked out anyway, just so I can say nothing is wrong, because the nurse is the medical professional and I am not, right? Nurses don't tell us how to teach math. I don't teach nurses what's a big deal and what's a little deal. Around a medical emergency. And so that's the way I see that. And that's the way I move forward with that from that point forward. It was a great lesson for me to learn. And it was like a professional slap on the hand. Like that, I didn't get written up or anything. It was just like, I went on the apology tour of a lifetime. And I owned it. I was, you know, and that's another point. Like if you make a mistake like that, own it. Like just own it. Because was the parent mad? Yes. They were livid. And I just had to say, you know what? I didn't think it was a big deal. I did not make the right call in that moment. My apologies. And I have learned from that. It will not happen again. And it hasn't. And so now I send every kid to the nurse. I have the nurse say, hey, they're fine. Then I call the parent. Hey, just letting you know, Janae slipped and fell today. She didn't have any injuries. I sent her to the nurse. They checked her out. They said she's fine. Just wanted to let you know. Do you have any questions? And or sometimes it's a voicemail. And then you follow up with an email. After every phone call, after every voicemail, after every text message, you take your time at the end of the day or on your lunch break or whenever you get some time, and you follow up with an email and you summarize that phone call. Hey, Mr. Jones, I gave you a call today. Just wanted to recap what we discussed. I let you know that there was a verbal altercation between Janae. We've got the results. She's going to be in school suspension tomorrow. If you have any questions, please give me a call at blah, 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 or insert email address here. But it is really important to follow up with an email for a number of reasons. One, it is documentation. If a parent comes back and says, I didn't get the message, or I didn't get your phone call, or God forbid, and this happens more frequently now than not, that you make the phone call, get sent to a voicemail, and the voicemail box is full, because people don't like to answer the phone when they don't recognize the phone number and they don't always have the school's number saved, that becomes another layer of protection for you as a teacher and as an administrator, like as an educator, like full stop. Whatever position you hold, if you are a custodian who is communicating with parents, if you are a bus driver who's communicating with parents, but especially for teachers and administrators, because we work so closely and so frequently with kids, it is very important to document that. So anytime I talk to parents, and it's a pain in the butt, I'm not gonna lie to you, it's because it is tedious. It's not a pain in the butt because I don't want to, because let's be real, you gotta want to do it. And you have to want to do it well. But it is a pain in the butt because it is tedious and time consuming. And my grandma used to say when I was younger, and I'm not a sewer, but she would say a stitch in time saves nine. When you take your time and you do something right the first time, you don't have to go back and redo it. So take the extra 5 minutes to send your email, recap the conversation. I don't go anywhere without a notebook. So when I'm on the phone with parents, I'm jotting down notes. Recapping the conversation. Those scripts are helpful for that reason, because you can refer back to the scripts. Email them after you finish talking to them or after the end of the day and let them know, recap that conversation, because then you have a paper trail to say, no, we talked on April 2nd and we talked about this and I told you about that and we did this, this, and this. Like, you are able to recap when people get forgetful. That was a really long answer for that question. But again, like, super, super important, because that communication piece it's pivotal, and it is paramount that we get it right, because it feeds into that relationship building. And like, to your point earlier, LaToya, like, their children are so precious to them. Like, it's, and when you really think about it foundationally, we're asking them to drop their kids off at the beginning of the year with strangers. On the flip side of the coin, I remember my first day in the classroom, and I get it every year at the first day of school. I'm like, ooh, I am in here with people's kids. Like, you know, I'm just a person myself. Some days I'm trying to figure out how I'm taking care of me, much less 25 kids in a room, right? So it's just, you know, when you have systems in place and when you have those relationships formed, the parents of your 25 kids become your biggest allies, your biggest cheerleaders, your biggest helpers, your biggest advocates, because then they know that you are a person who is authentic and worth your salt, and they can speak to your character, and they know that when their children are with you, they can trust you. And so sooner you can do that, and the more intentional, meaningful, and authentic you are in building those relationships through frequent and thorough communication, the better and the easier life will be.
I wish I had that my first year teaching.
Man.
All of that information.
I did not. It did not come easy. It is, I mean, for me, it was definitely trial and error, and in some cases, trial by fire. But like, but then they become these, like, again, to the example with the scraped knee or whatever. I never in a million years thought I would have got chewed out over a scraped knee with no blood. And I did. And that was a great lesson for me. And when I moved on to these different positions and in higher up in education, it's one I share frequently with the people I work with, be it other teachers, be it other principals, whomever, like anybody who'll listen, because that was a great teachable moment for me. And if that story can save one person from not getting fussed at by a parent the way I did, then job well done. I don't have to do it anymore, you know?
Yes. Yes. You know, you said a lot that I want to speak to, but we don't have the time for you to speak to everything. But I am going to pull out two things that you said. One of the things that really hit home, you were talking about how when you call parents about a behavior, if it were a fight, a physical altercation that occurred, that verbiage is so important. Mm-hmm. When I think about us talking about culture earlier, thinking about boundaries, what you allow at home versus what we allow here at school, vocabulary and the way that we communicate with people is huge. If I pick up the phone and I use the word fight, my verbiage of what a fight is, my thought process of what a fight is, could be completely different from yours. And so that right there could immediately cause an issue, and it could break our relationship before we even get started. So being very mindful of the way that you choose to say things. And like you already said, your scripts are going to save you. So even when you're making those scripts, think about the perspective that you're approaching it, because your experiences or your lived experiences, the 20, 25 children that you have come into your space, they may not have your lived experiences. They didn't grow up the same way that you did. So what you mean by fight is going to be something completely different, because I know when I hear fight, there is nothing verbal happening.
Right.
It is always physical. So if you call me and tell me I got into a fight, I'm on my way. Like, there's nothing else that needs to be said. Just know that I'm on my way up there. So just be mindful that vocabulary is huge.
That's right.
The second thing that you mentioned was, oh, see, now I forgot. It was so good. We had already talked about the scripts, which I'm totally going to steal. Just letting you know.
Please, yes.
It'll come back to me because it was so good. See, this is why I need to take notes. You ever be in the moment and you're like, oh, that was so good, I'm going to remember it. Mm-hmm. And now I don't remember. So when it comes back to me, I'm going to circle back to it. One of the other questions that I had for you is thinking about how teachers, including myself, will make assumptions about our families that we serve. Mm. I know I have been in spaces where I have very few parents come to parent-teacher conferences, no matter how many different ways I try to contact them, they just don't come. Mm-hmm. I have had spaces where schools will put on events, whether it's a Black History program, it's a literacy night, and for whatever reason, my particular families don't show up to these events. Sometimes we'll get those events that happen once a year where maybe a kindergarten or third grade class is doing a performance, and then everybody, including aunties and uncles, grandmas and grandpas, will show up for that. Mm-hmm. So as opposed to me taking it personal, because I do, what advice would you give to teachers who cannot seem to get family engagement when they need it the most?
So this is another piece where the communication and the relationship building is pivotal. So before we jump to the conclusion, like before jumping to conclusions that parents aren't interested, we have to evaluate that. I have never met a parent who is not invested in their child fully. And I've never met a parent who is not invested in their child academically, like never. So to the point around culture, like similar to the point we made about culture and how each home has its own different set of values, and like from taking off your shoes to the way we speak to each other, like all the way down to what holidays we celebrate, which religions we practice or don't practice. Like that is the same way that comes across, and that is part of parents and families' cultures, right? And so I don't know any parents around, like not a single parent around, who is like, again, like kissing their kid on the forehead and saying, have a good day at school. I want you to be a holy terror. Bring everybody the most drama that you can find. Nobody is telling their kid that. That's not happening. That's not the pep talk they get in the morning. They're not saying go in there and be terrible. Nobody's doing that. Schools, in the way that they are set up in this day and age, and particularly as I reflect on how schools were run during COVID when we were all at home, there is a lot the school system, the American school system, can stand to learn from that time and really pivot and adjust how we approach school. So I want to throw that out there before I fully answer this question. I think as educators, and again, when we think about ourselves as educators, as the expert and the professional in the room, we act like it. And we should. The customer service aspect, an example you brought in, when you go to, I used to work at a hotel front desk. I find that people who did customer service jobs are really good at this parent piece too, because to your point, customer service, the things I learned as a customer service rep at a hotel at a front desk, I use those skills every single day and much more than I use how to teach reading skills, particularly because I was an upper elementary teacher as well. But anyway, you don't walk into the front desk of a hotel and tell them what to do with their hotel rooms, right? You don't go to the teller at the bank and tell them how to process your money. And so if we expect our parents to teach us with respect and as the experts in the room, we also can't go into the parents' home because they're the experts of their home and say, you don't care about your kid because you don't show up to X, Y, and Z. So if the goal, if the object of the game is to get parents engaged and involved, it would behoove us to ask them how they want to be engaged and involved. If you want true engagement, you got to meet them where they are. A lot of times, parent-teacher conferences are done during the day, during the school day, on a weekday. We, as educators, are at work. We want people to take off their jobs to come meet us at our jobs. There are many of us who are parents who are also educators who have to take off from our job at work to go see about our kid at their school, at their work. Everybody can't do that. Educators are typically like a contracted job where you have PTO, you know, personal time off. You can take a day. If you really are blessed, you have a principal or supervisor who is flexible, will let you leave and come back without taking the time or let you take a long lunch or do it on your plan time, like whatever. Everybody doesn't have this. A lot of our parents, some of our parents are working hourly positions and they cannot get away from their jobs with as much flexibility. Some parents in this economy are working 2 and 3 jobs and cannot get away. That doesn't mean they don't care. In fact, some might argue they care more because they're working so much more to make sure they have what they need. It doesn't mean they're not interested. It just means they can't make it to that particular thing. It is difficult being an educator. It's not an easy job. It is incredibly time consuming. We get bad reputations around the fact that we get summers off. And we know as educators, we work our butts off all summer. And what I like to say is the summer is not off. The pace changes. It looks different, but we're not off, right? And with that, again, you have to authentically want to do it and it will pay off in the long run, I promise. But as you're making those student and parent profiles, ask them how they want to be engaged and work with them on engagement. Work with them on engagement. It's in my opinion, in my humble opinion, I think it's a little bit judgmental to say it is not like you can't make it to parent-teacher conferences, but you can make it to graduation. That's judgmental. They're engaged. If they didn't show up at all, like think about it from the child's perspective. A lot of times we don't have school when we have parent-teacher conferences, so the kids are at home, right? If I'm a 7-year-old kid and my parent doesn't come to my parent-teacher conference and they got the report card anyway, as a 7-year-old, do I care? As a 7-year-old, I'm at the school play that happens once a year. My mom is the only one out in the audience. I'm going to feel some kind of way as a 7-year-old. If kids are really at the forefront of what we're talking about, what difference does it make? What is the object of the game? Is the object of the game to have the conversation with the parent, to let them know what the concerns are about the kid and to inform them of their grades, their behaviors, and what they need to improve? If that's the goal, if it happens on a Wednesday at 2 or a Friday at 6 or a Saturday at 10, what difference does it make as long as we got the information out? I do recall in my earlier years, probably about year 3 or 4, maybe 5, when things really started making sense for me, we had conferences and went in the school I was working in. And the requirement was we had to log the hours and the time that we worked. And I had a handful, like I had all my conferences scheduled. And this, I was teaching 6th grade, which if anybody knows, 6th grade is a really hard grade to engage, particularly with parent engagement, because we have 6th grade is in an elementary setting, because 6th grade, just it's one of those things, like they kind of put them out to pasture. They're the big kids. I don't need to talk about all that. But I had a goal to increase, like personal goal of mine was, because of its importance, was to make sure I had 100% participation. I had three parents. I could not schedule time. I could not get the time. I could, like, we could not find a time. I offered before school. I offered after school. I offered middle of the day school. I could not find the time. I finally called those parents one at a time and said, if I set up a Saturday conference, would you be willing to meet with me in person on Saturday morning, afternoon? Now, I'm going to tell you, I ain't no morning person. I ain't even going to lie to you. I wouldn't meet nobody before 10 o'clock in the morning because I am not functioning before 10 o'clock in the morning. But I did set up three conferences, one at 10, one at 11, and one at 12 at a Starbucks in the neighborhood of my school. And I held conferences, three individual conferences in a Starbucks on a Saturday because it was important to me to get that information out to my parents and to build that relationship with the parents and make sure they had the information they needed for their kids. If it is truly about engaging the parents, we can't be judgmental about how they're engaging, and we have to meet them halfway and see what we can do to get them engaged. 9 times out of 10, it is not because they are not interested. It is simply an issue of convenience. Now, if I had it my way, we'd offer school in shifts. Night school would be a thing for kids. Early school would be a thing for kids. Middle of the day school would be, we would rotate that sucker like shifts. K through 12 education would be a lot like college where you pick your classes, you got some days off, you rotate. I got all kinds of ideas for that. That's not this show. That's not today's topic. But when we talk about how we engage or how kids or how, I'm sorry, how parents engage with school events and those types of things, I think within the current system we have and what we're working with now, if you want to be successful at it, you got to think outside the box and try some different things to meet the parents where they are and not assuming that where they are is less than where we are.
That is the key. That is the key. I have started to get back into Stephen Covey's The 7 Strategies of Highly Effective People. I'm sure I just messed my title all the way up.
You know what you're talking about.
Right? Because I talk about it enough. I shouldn't even say one of. Like, my absolute go-to is seek first to understand and to be understood. Mm-hmm. Making sure, even though I cannot put myself in your shoes, there are so many situations where you literally just cannot do that.
Right.
So for me, it is about understanding what you are trying to say to me. If I am seeing that you are not showing up to all of these events, you are not coming to parent-teacher conferences, then clearly I'm not offering something that you think may be of importance right now. The other piece of that is you said that some of our parents work more than one job. Mm-hmm. They don't have the option to come because for them, the priority is making sure that my child has food to eat and that they have a roof over their head. That's those right. are priorities for parents.
Right.
I look at it as you have trusted me to yes. educate your child. If yes. you are not on the phone calling me all day and all night long, emailing me, questioning what I am doing and what your child is learning, mm-hmm. for mm-hmm. me, that is a sign of trust. You trust me as the expert That's to right. educate your child. And I thank you for that level of trust.
That's right.
So I have learned not to be offended. Mm-hmm. It takes some time, I have to admit.
It does take some time.
But I got there. It's not easy, right?
Like, who wants to get up and work on a Saturday, right?
Right. And who wants to be stressed out all the time? Who wants to be worried all the time about what your families are thinking and why you don't do this? Or comparing yourself to other educators in the building?
Come on.
Great that you got 100% participation. I am so happy and ecstatic for you.
Yeah.
I know I did what I needed to do. And I know that I communicate well with my families. So they have the information that they need.
That's right. That's right.
That is all that matters.
And I'm going to be honest with you. I set that goal for myself that year because I had been hearing so much like chit chat in the hallways about how sixth grade parents were never engaged. I was like, watch them engage with me. I'm finna prove you wrong. Because the people who had high engagement, like maybe it was a different year. Maybe it was like just that batch of parents were like balling that year. I don't know. But like, I knew my parents and I knew some of them were working multiple jobs. I knew they were never gonna make a 10 a.m. Tuesday conference. Like they weren't gonna make it. At 2 p.m. on a weekday, I'm at work. You at work. Like we at work. And I also, like, I think about I really think about like doctor appointments, like as an educator, like, and we hear people, we engage like family members, friends, like people always complain about the doctor, right? Like the doctors are all only open from 9 to 5. And if they only open Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, we can't never make an appointment because we at work and they at work. And then Lord forbid the doctor take a vacation. Like, you know, it's hard to get an appointment. Like I have appointments booked like 6 months out. That's why we have so many urgent cares popping up, right? People complain about the doctors and making appointments all the time with them because of their availability and office hours. Teachers got the same thing going on. It's very similar. And it's not teachers' faults. It's not the teachers' faults that those are our working hours. And I'm also not suggesting that we all run out and have conferences every Saturdays with parents or stretch yourself in a way that is going to burn you out. That's not what I'm suggesting at all. What I am suggesting is sometimes think outside of the box. What I didn't say is those 3 hours I met those parents on a Saturday morning, I got to shave those 3 hours off of the Friday prior. So like I got to leave a little early. And with that communication with parents, like you communicate with your people too. So I talked to my principal that year. And I said, hey, I want to let you know, and I want to make sure it's okay with you. I set these 3 conferences up. I got 3 hours of work going on Saturday. Is it okay that I leave 3 hours early on Friday? Because I got these conferences going on Saturday. Like that communication is important on that end too. And not only was I met with a resounding yes, but they were impressed. Like, what? You gonna work on a Saturday? Okay, cool. That communication is important with your colleagues and your supervisors and all of that as well. But I reflect on my experiences where I have really good experiences and what was great about them and apply that in my setting, in my profession. And then I think about what experiences I have that don't work well, that really are hard and difficult to engage with, like at the DMV. Oh, I had to get my place renewed recently. And it took me 3 days. And it took me 3 days because as I engaged with the people in those spaces I had to go in, like negative attitudes, not listening to me as I explained what I needed, not answering my questions and moving very quickly through the process and assuming I didn't know what they were talking about, not listening and hearing that I had a situation that was different from what is the status quo or the norm. And this is a true story. Like, this is what I spent a spring break doing, renewing my place and having these weird conversations about, come to find out my account was locked and nobody knows why and nobody explained why. So when I go to work and talk to my kids' parents, my students' parents, I'm saying like, okay, I need to be clear when I explain. When they're talking to me about issues they're having, I need to make sure I'm actively listening and clearly understanding what they have going on, what their needs are. And then that I am, if I understand it, that I explain it clearly to them and being honest if I don't understand, asking questions if I don't understand, referring them to the appropriate person if they have an answer that I don't have. Your personal experiences that are working or not working for you, if you reflect on those pieces and then apply that to your relationship building with parents, you can vastly improve your engagement and relationships with your parents as well. And I mean, and that's like, you know, Latoya, back to your customer service example, like that's why customer service people who did it well have great success in this area, because it's the same skills. You want to provide them with an experience that's going to be positive in a service industry. And education is a service industry dealing with people.
So I am going to approach this from a different perspective.
Okay.
So think about teachers who have come to you concerned or just outright complaining that they have parents who have been rude and disrespectful to them. They have had parents who are yelling at them. And for example, I called home. I explained to a family that their child had a verbal altercation. The parent immediately said, well, what did the child say to my son? Well, I would explain what the child said. Oh, well, then my son was right. What are you calling me for? He didn't start anything. What do you recommend teachers do?
Well, once it elevates to that level, you got to send it to your supervisor. So before that, first and foremost, as you engage with the parent, stay calm, stay level-headed. Do not engage in an argument or a power struggle with the parent. You have to stay level-headed. The last thing you want to do is get into a verbal altercation with the parent. Let them take you out of your professionalism. You cannot let that happen. If you're going to be the expert in the room, you got to remain the expert in the room. You can't lose your cool when you're faced with a situation like that. Very next thing is document everything. Again, take notes. I do not make a phone call without a notebook. Take notes and jot down what is being discussed on that phone call and include the things parents said or they did not agree with, or they, you know, they rebutted the situation with, you know, what was said to my child, whatever. Then after that, I would report it to higher ups, the supervisor, the principal, whomever, and let them know that. And this can be tough too, particularly for new teachers, because I think sometimes as new teachers, we want to like tackle it all, and you don't have to. A situation like that is not a teacher task. Like, that's not something for teachers to handle. If you've done your due diligence, because teachers give some consequences, like those classroom managed issues or, you know, those types of consequences. If we're having an issue where a parent is like cussing you out or going off on you because they disagree with you, that needs to go up to your supervisor and they need to be notified. And so essentially you need to call for backup. When you call for backup, have that information and share those notes with your principal or your supervisor and let them know what's going on. If I'm the principal and supervisor, then it's time to have a conversation with the parent from that lens and aspect and say like, hey, we are simply informing you about the situation and we're informing you of the consequences ever that's been given. And so that's a point where you are less relational and more factual, where you are sharing the you are sharing the facts of the situation. You are sharing the consequences that are being disseminated, and you are sharing next steps, you know, on what is to happen. So like if I'm the principal and I'm suspending a child for having a physical altercation, it's like, hi, Mrs. John Doe had a physical altercation. As a result, he is being suspended for 3 days. Please pick him up as soon as possible. He will remain in the principal's office until you get here. Do you have any questions? Thank you. Have a good day. We'll see you soon. Like regardless to if the parent agrees or disagrees, it's just rooted in facts. And those decisions have to be made in a fair way that aligns with your school or district's policies and making sure we are not violating any rules as we make those decisions. But from a classroom teacher standpoint, or, you know, a substitute teacher standpoint, whomever it is in the classroom who is first point of contact, if you are getting that level of pushback, you need to call in for backup. And understand that that is not a mark on you and your ability to manage a situation. Because conversely, if the shoe were on the other foot and the teacher is yelling and fussing at a parent, the parent is going to call your boss. Like, the parent is going to call the principal and say, you know, Ms. Alford was yelling and screaming at me. Everybody deserves to be respected in these settings. And we should be able to agree or disagree in a respectful manner, without having, you know, a screaming match. You don't deserve to be yelled at and screamed at on the phone or in person with a parent. So at that point, it's time to call in for backup. And I've done that before too.
I love that.
Not yelled at parents, but like backup when I needed it.
Love that you phrased it that way, because as I'm listening to you, I keep seeing that image of not all superheroes wear capes, and then it's typically an image of a teacher. And so, you know, we think of ourselves as superheroes because we wear so many capes, we wear so many hats, we do all the things.
That's right.
And there are situations where we shouldn't have to wear this hat.
That's right.
I am a classroom educator first.
Yep.
The reason why we have instructional coaches, why we have SEL coaches, why we have assistant principals and principals, we each have a role. As a new teacher, my biggest recommendation would be stay in your role. Do not take on additional responsibilities your first year as an educator. You already have so many things to do. When you have those amazing leaders who are telling you, if XYZ happens, if you need the support, if you need me to sit in on a conference, let me know.
Yes.
Tell them.
Tell them. Absolutely. Tell them.
You have the support that you need. Have it. Take advantage of it while you have it.
Absolutely. Especially in your first three. Honestly, you don't get into a really good rhythm until after year three. After year three, you start to like feel like you know what you're doing. The first 2 years are a blur if you even remember them at all. But like, you really get into a groove by year three. And then like do not be afraid to ask for help, even beyond. Like, I remember maybe in year three, my first couple of years, I was departmentalized in my teaching experiences. And so I think maybe year three or so, and it's becoming a blur now, but I think around year three, I was asked to teach reading for the first time since I had graduated from undergrad. So I didn't remember anything. And so I went to my principal and said, hey, we're switching up the subject areas this year. I am not confident in my ability to teach reading. Is there anything we can do to get me better trained or to get some kind of support for me, maybe over the summer, some workshops, some PD, something to support me in teaching, in reading instruction and teaching reading? Because a lot of times, like, principals move in a different way where there is a little bit of a coverage, like, they don't want to just move you for coverage, right? There's some strategy and some thinking and some reasoning behind grade level or classroom movements or whatever is happening in your building. And it is very nuanced and very, you know, specific to the building and the situation. And my principal at the time was not, it wasn't that she didn't think I could do it because I was certified, but I was a little leery because I had been teaching math. Like, they, you know, when you're departmentalized, they typically separate math and reading. I wasn't confident in my own abilities to teach reading. And I took it seriously where I did not want to be in there like playing school when I needed to be teaching school. And so she linked me up with an instructional coach and we worked very closely side by side. We prepared over the summer, which is why teachers don't get summers off. We prepared over the summer, like some very specific lesson plans. We created a schedule where like she was lead teacher and then I was lead teacher and then we co-taught and it became really successful for the kids. And I learned a ton working with that instructional coach. And so then the following year, I didn't have to be on a coaching cycle because I was a lot more confident in my ability to teach reading. So like, and again, not that I was kissing anybody's behind, but like, my principal was confident and like excited that I went to her and was like, hey, this is an area I'm struggling. Can you help me or can you find me some help? Because again, just like that relationship with the parents that we have to strengthen, you want to do that with your partner teachers, your colleagues, your grade level teams, your administrators, because that strengthens your relationship and trust with them as well. I became a teacher they could lean on because it was like, if Janae's struggling, she's going to say it. I don't have to guess or wonder. If Janae needs help, she's going to ask for it. And how much easier would our jobs be if our partner teachers, if our colleagues, if our, you know, principals, if our instructional coaches could knew and we felt safe enough to say, hey, I'm struggling without getting fired or without getting written up, right? So that was, and that really kind of became the foundation for me when I moved into administration, like being a leader who could create that environment for teachers where they could say, like, I am struggling and I need help and I need to do this in a safe space where I can get the support I need. And with that, you can't cultivate and create an environment like that if we are hiding behind like perceived, like how we're being perceived as opposed to like really having conversations and knowing how we're being perceived. So like, ask the question when you need help. Ask for help when you need the help. We don't have to do it alone and we can't fix problems we don't know exist.
That is a great way to say that. I think a lot of us as educators see it as a weakness mm-hmm. when we are asking for help because we're supposed to know these things.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Before we wrap up today, mm-hmm. what final words of encouragement would you offer to new teachers who want to build those strong communication habits with parents?
I think be your authentic self and genuine, like make genuine connection. Now, I'm not talking about going to happy hour with parents. Don't go to happy hour with parents. But I am saying like when you're making the phone calls and when you're writing the scripts, like, just be real. You don't have to put on a show. There are some tips and tricks like the scripts and the language and that kind of thing. But, you know, be yourself. I throw in humor. Just be yourself when you're making those connections and having those conversations. I think, too, the second thing I would say is use a really strong empathetic lens. Like, I am not a parent, but what would I want to know if I were? What would I want the teacher to tell me if this was my child in the situation? And third, like, use your resources. Use your resources in all aspects that you can. So sometimes using your resources are going to be like phoning a friend or a colleague. Sometimes the resources, like for me, because I am not a parent, like I don't have children of my own, it is helpful for me to call my parents. It is helpful for me to call my siblings who have children of different ages. Like my brother has a high school age son, an elementary age son, and my sister has a newborn and like early elementary, early childhood age kids. I have friends who have children throughout the school system at different grade levels. I have friends who have children who have special needs. I have friends who have children. I have a lot of children in my life by proxy who run the whole gamut and the whole myriad of experiences. I leverage those friendships and those people in my life and use them as resources and get the support I need. Like, what are you looking for from your teacher? What do you want to know from your teacher? And just let them talk and listen and reflect on that and take the notes. And then, and as I mentioned earlier, another resource for me is my experiences, you know, through customer service that go really well or don't go well. So use your resources. You don't have to do it alone. And don't be afraid to ask the question.
This has been absolutely amazing. I know that all of our listeners are walking away with solid strategies that they could literally use in their classroom tomorrow.
Thank you.
The hope here is that this conversation has made a teacher's journey a little bit easier.
Yeah.
We have been able to inspire teachers to stay within the education profession.
Yes.
We know how hard it is right now, but it is still a very
important
field to be in, a much needed field. Like, we educators, teachers, principals are needed, desperately needed right now and definitely in the years to come. So thank you so much for giving us your time today.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
So to all of our listeners, if you love this episode, if you found it to be helpful, please follow, share, and leave a review. And don't forget, you are not just surviving, you are thriving with a purpose. Until next time.